You're taught so much. You know, I have filled my head since I was a young man, right? I was a missionary kid. My parents were poor. I had no idea. I'm not saying that to get people feel bad for me or anything. I'm saying that because that's what drove me. What drove me was my parents didn't have squat. I was made fun of as a kid. I was going to be successful regardless. And no matter how many people told me I wasn't, just watch me stick my chin out. Remember Kobe Bryant in the NBA Finals? He just stuck his chin out and he just willed it to be. That's how I lived. I lived from that place of like, I'm willing it to happen. Surrender for someone who's willed his entire life, surrender? That's a word that, like, it wasn't even in my vocabulary.
Right.
We'll never surrender was my mindset. But what I realized is that what I was able to see, which is, again, it's ugly, right? Anytime you see something about yourself, it's ugly. It's great. You're grateful for it, but it's ugly. I realized that on one hand, I was telling people this philosophy, but on the other hand, I wasn't really living it, right? I knew it. I knew how to articulate it. I knew, and I believed it, but I didn't see it in me. The only way that I got to this place was I was in a situation for the first time in my professional career, I realized I couldn't sustain what I was doing, and things were outside of my control, and I had to make a decision on what I was going to do, and so I decided to surrender, and it was that surrender that made it possible for me to basically tear down my organization and rebuild it.
Most of us never learned how to train our brains, which is why most of us needlessly settle, struggle, and worse, suffer. My name is Chris Doris, and I want to make brain training mainstream. This is my series, Tough Talks, Conversations on Mental Toughness. I'm interviewing badasses from all walks of life on what mental toughness means to them and their unique approaches to strengthening their minds. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Tough Talks, Conversations on Mental Toughness. I am your host, Chris Doris. And before I introduce you to our guest today, let's take care of our typical housekeeping item, which is if you're not getting the daily dose mental toughness tips in 30 seconds or less delivered to your email inbox every morning at about 6 a.m., wherever you are in the world, 365 days of the year. And pardon me, if you're not getting notifications of my new blog posts that go out every Tuesday, and if you're not getting notifications of these new podcast, Tough Talks podcast episodes, then let's just clean that all up in one fell swoop by going to christopherdoris.com/lists, L-I-S-T-S, name, email, click, you get all the goodies. So we've got a repeat appearance. We are doing a Jonathan Kaiser 2.0 session today. So this will be JK's second appearance. He initially visited with us in November of 2019 after his second book came out, which is entitled Ruthless. Actually, it's not entitled. When you look at the book, if you go to Amazon and you put in the search Jonathan Kaiser, just put Jonathan Kaiser and you'll see both of his books, the most recent of which is called, it looks, when you look at the cover, it's cool. It's very, very clever. It's got the word ruthless and it crossed out to win. But in tiny print above it, it says, you don't have to be. So get your attention. And the point is, you don't have to be ruthless to win. That's the book that he wrote in 2019, I think it was. Yeah, like right, yeah, I think I interviewed him right after his first book or second book came out. His first book is here. I can't find the ruthless one. I probably gave it to somebody. But I have his initial book here, which is called Disruptive. How to Disrupt Your Industry Through Selfless Service. And this is a guy who gets selfless service. Now, here's what Jonathan and I had dinner a couple months ago. And man, he's just like, he is amped right now, which is so absolutely beautiful. Because for good reason, he is killing it professionally and personally. So, this is JK 2.0. JK and CD 2.0, it's our second podcast, but we're going to have him describe for us why is his commercial real estate company thriving post-pandemic through the pandemic. What were the specifics of that? And then how are you, JK 2.0? He's reinvented himself. This is a man who's infinitely committed. Infinitely. He has also coached with the two best coaches in the world. Right? And I'm sure we'll have some stories about those guys as well. So he's always, I mean, he's just so infinitely committed to his own growth. And I can't wait to hear, you know, what's different about not just his business, but about him. So he's here. Let's go find him. Where are you at, JK? 2.0.
Well, there he is. There he is. That guy right over there.
My man. You're the man.
Welcome back, brother. We got a day of 2.0s, man. This is our 2.0 for Tough Talks. And when we had dinner a couple months ago, we discussed some interesting things that I want you to really unpack for my Tough Talks tribe today, namely Kaiser 2.0, which is the name of your, well, it's your last name, it's the name of your company. You are stellar, demolishing it, killing it, commercial real estate industry company. But then what I really also am excited to hear from you is JK 2.0, you 2.0. I want to hear about that. Because one of the things that I have always admired so much about you is that you are incredibly passionate about growing yourself. Like you take no minutes off from that. That's not exhausting. That's not the way I observe it. It's just like you have this beautiful, healthy addiction to growing yourself, to strengthening yourself. And it's beautiful to watch, you know. So I'm excited to hear about a lot of stuff from you today. So let's open with this if it's okay with you. Yep. We are recording this at the end of September 2022. We are at what we believe to be hopefully the end of a killer pandemic, which in addition to killing so many humans around the planet, killed a lot of business. And you can make an argument that you're in an industry that having the whole shitload of the planet work from home really doesn't serve. So how's Kaiser doing post-pandemic?
Well, first of all, thank you for all that you do. Your daily inspirations are wonderful. They always hit me right where I need it. It's almost like you're in my brain saying, what does JK need today? And then you just put it out there into the world. And so I'm grateful for that. I really, really enjoy them. But yeah, we're doing great, brother. But it wasn't an easy path to get here. You know, we'll have a record year, both top line and bottom line, because we did a lot of streamlining over the pandemic. But that's not really the point. So I think everybody kind of looked at their operations during the pandemic and said, you know, where can we tighten up? Where can we make sure that we're being as effective and efficient as possible? So that, I don't think that's any story. I think really, from my perspective, the hardest part of the transformation that we went through, which was both personal, like you said, as well as organizationally, was this idea of you have to almost break what you have that's working to make it better. And I'll drop the almost, because it's not like we got rid of the company or we got rid of our business model or any of those things. All that continues and continues to this day. But we really had to rethink the entire organization from the ground up. And I think a lot of people missed that opportunity of the pandemic. I think one of the greatest gifts that the pandemic brought was the freedom, the cover, so to speak. Of the pandemic to really look at everything and say, what could we be doing better and what could we be improving? So with that all said, let me go back a little bit and kind of build the framework. So we went into January of 2020, kind of on a record high. We'd had a record year. We were humming. We were hiring new people right and left. Since I launched the firm in 2013, our average growth had been some crazy number, like, I mean, not for .com, but some crazy number for a non-electronic related firm, right? We're a commercial real estate brokerage firm, right? We're a services firm. So we had grown like, I don't know, just around 40% year over year. So we were on this really, really nice path. Or so I thought. right? And then the pandemic happens, wham, right? So I remember that Friday, whatever day that was, that fateful Friday, and I remember thinking, whoa, because now over a period of maybe a week or 2 weeks, almost every single one of our requirements are our transactions on behalf of clients, right? So we represent tenants. We help them with their real estate needs, office, industrial, healthcare, retail. Literally everything was put on hold. So when you're looking at your numbers, you're going, whoa, I'm not sure how this is going to play out. I'm wondering, hey, do I need to go apply at Wendy's or, you know, what's the deal? So there was that initial kind of shock. So we did some immediate kind of, you know, kind of crisis factoring. We had a wonderful, we let two people go that I still, you know, wonderful, wonderful people, but just no need. You don't need a front desk person when everybody's working at home, right? When nobody's having meetings, you don't need an assistant whose job is to coordinate all these meetings because you're not having any meetings. And so that was kind of the first piece. But as it unfolded, what I started to see, and this is the most important part. What I started to see was that a lot of the things that I had either taken for granted or assumed were going well because of growth. Sometimes you get addicted to your own growth and you're looking at the growth numbers and you're going, well, look at us grow. Everything's great. Whereas there was rot developing underneath that I wasn't seeing. It was almost like a leak in the wall, right? It was like drip, drip, drip. But I didn't see that drip because I was just focused on the output coming out the pipe. So what I saw was that as people and organizations get squeezed, for those who are just listening to me, I'm modeling a squishing of something with my hands, that what comes out the sides is not something that you would normally see if you're not squeezing. And so I think the pandemic squeezed everyone in a lot of different ways. And you started to see behaviors coming out that you didn't anticipate. You started to see misalignment glaring you in the face. And it also created this interesting dynamic of, we were a culture, Chris. I mean, we're all about culture, right? So we were a culture that was focused on everybody in the office and duck fights and rah, rah. And, you know, it was just like this fun.
Did you say duck fights?
Duck fights, man. So we had these little ducks, like you put with
like
your kids.
Behind you.
Like the one behind me, but that one's kind of big, right? So we would have the little ducks, and it was just standard protocol for everybody to throw ducks at everybody all the time. Probably looking back, probably not the greatest HR idea, but I loved it and everybody else loved it. Or at least I think they did, pretended to at least. And we had a lot of fun, right? So everything was about culture and about being together and about fun and about, you know, we're working on this exciting mission to change the industry and we're going to transform commercial real estate. And you got people like, you know, John Mackey with Whole Foods talking great about us. The governor's talking great about us. USA Today's naming us the industry disruptor. Like, we have the tiger by the tail. And then the pandemic hits. And what I realized through all this process is I'm looking at this misalignment that's coming out. And I also realize as I look within that I'm actually not happy. Right here, I go and I start this firm with the idea of I'm tired of working for the man. And I'm going to do my own thing and I'm going to make it better and perfect. And we got these 15 cooperating principles that are designed to create this sort of utopian view of what commercial real estate could be like. And the guy that created it doesn't like his baby, right? He's looking at his baby going, I'm not having fun anymore. And I started evaluating why I wasn't having fun.
Okay.
And I started to evaluate because it gave you time to think. Right? So that's kind of the first piece of the pandemic is, it forced us to think. And while I was the advocate for, you know, meditation and planning and all those things, I hadn't spent enough time thinking through a critical lens, and this gave me that opportunity to do so. So what I realized is that we had become misaligned in a lot of ways with our mission. We had people on board that were misaligned. And I was enabling it, Chris. That's the hardest part. You know, the reason why I love self-improvement so much is you used an awesome word. You said addicted. For me, my drug of choice is realizing where I suck, because the only way that I can make my life better is identifying those areas where I suck So I'm not projecting my issues on everybody else like the world does all the time, and I'm plenty guilty of it, right? So I was able to look myself in the mirror. Long story short, I said, after a lot of thought, a lot, you know, so I'm fast forwarding in the story, so we're not sitting here for 12 hours. I came up with this idea.
I'd love to sit here for 12 hours with you, brother. You know that.
Yeah, I know. We would. We'd probably need a cocktail or seven, though, to be realistic.
True story.
I realized that I wanted to look at Kaiser as a startup. And I wanted to say, not what would I fix, not what would I change, not what would I do differently than what I'm doing today, but going back to that startup mindset that I had in 2013, where everything was new and everything was ahead, and we were building the airplane as we fly, and we had this exciting mission. I said, I'm going to go back there, and I'm going to realign, and I'm going to find the purity of that, which meant that I had to do a couple things. Number one, I had to look across my entire organization and ask myself a couple key questions.
Okay, let's hear them.
The first one was looking at everybody in the organization. And I literally had a list. And in my meditation, I went through, did my own assessment, and then we did it as a leadership team. And I said, knowing what I know today, would I not keep this person? Would I hire this person? Because I think it's a very different thing to say keep and hire. Keep comes with legacy. Hire's brand new, it's fresh. There's no wrong answer, right? Hire is an A or B with no implications. You don't bring the baggage. You don't bring the sunk cost in. You don't bring the but this and but that and but that. And I identified three different areas of misalignment. Number one, behavioral, which is the most obvious, right? It's the stuff that screams. I had allowed behaviors. I'm ashamed to say this, honestly. Like I was the champion of saying things, and then I'd allowed this without really, honestly, without realizing it. I mean, I knew, I'm not an idiot, but I didn't have it in this neat little frame where I was accepting ownership of the fact that I was allowing it, if that makes any sense. It's not like I was doing it intentionally. I was just sort of almost ignoring it, but without the intentionality of it. And I realized that there were behaviors that had been modeled by people, senior people in the organization, that were undermining the credibility of my stance as standing for these 15 core operating principles because they weren't aligned. And so I had to figure out a plan for those folks, which was not easy because I love people very, very deeply. And when you join my firm, I take it very, like, it's personal for me. It's like, I want to help you. I want you to be successful. I want us to be successful together. And so having to figure out disengaging with those was challenging. The second thing that I realized is that there were people that were misaligned around work ethic. Like, Kaiser is all about people that work really, really hard towards a mission and want to do big things in the world. And there were people that were sort of one foot in the, you know, one toe in, or one foot in, or a foot and a half in, or whatever. So we had to reconcile that. And then the third, and I think the hardest one for me, and this was the one that caused me the most pain, was I realized that over the pandemic, some people had become very siloed. So in the organization, we all collaborate, we work together. But some people, for whatever reasons, have gone internally and just kind of become either themselves or their little team, where they weren't cooperating, they weren't collaborating. Not that they were doing anything wrong or, you know, still providing great service, but they had went inward instead of collaborative. And so we made the difficult decision that we're going to have to make these changes. And I started articulating these changes. And some people, to their credit, and, you know, they self-selected out, which that was hard too, because, you know, I'd spent so much time and energy and investment in people, and to have people leave was really hard for me. Now today I view it as like, thank God, right? But back in the day, I didn't have that mindset. It was like every single person, whether I asked them to leave or they self-selected out, it caused me pain. It felt like it was death of a mission. And just as an aside, what I realized, because here I was, this poster child for, hey, it could be better, it could be different, we've created this amazing environment, come join me. To have people leave, to me, was almost like I don't look at it this way now, but in the moment, it was like a repudiation of what I stood for.
Wow.
Wow.
Right? So I had my head all twisted around this. Like it was all upside down. But as I, sorry, go ahead.
So for about 10 times already so far in this conversation, I've had a visitation from my late great mentor. Did you know, I can't remember if we've talked about this, the late great Jim Myers.
We love Jim collectively, you and I, brother.
All right. So I'm hearing, you know, when I would attend his CEO forum meetings and I would sit, because I was speaking, right? So I'm sitting in the corner and they're going around. Well, he always started at each of his meetings with some teaching, wisdom, because he's a legend. And he said it a million times. If he said it once, he said the number one mistake that leaders make in businesses is they keep the wrong people on the bus too long. And he followed that up always with this. And he never fired anyone. And what I'm about to say is not a euphemism. It's a different way of looking at it. He invited people into their futures, right? And it's not a euphemism. It's not just like avoiding saying the bad word, F word, fired.
I'm writing it down. He invited, say it again. He invited
people into their futures. He I'm hearing him through you, dude. So like he loved people so much, man. He always would hammer home your greatest, I don't care what business you're in, your greatest resource is the human one. So get with it. Right. And you get that. You get that on the deepest of levels. I mean, that's what you're saying right now. Right. Is your love for and desire to serve humans. That's who you are. So but what we've learned about kicking someone off the team is that it's a bad deal. It's bad shit. Bad. It's a horror story. And he completely deconstructed that and reconstructed a beautiful paradigm, which is every one of us deserves to thrive, and this may not be the place. So what I'm hearing from you, and you have such clarity, it's beautiful. That's how like you're like a wizard. You see shit so clearly, and you slowed down, which, by the way, is the most lucrative discipline I ever learned from Steve Chandler, the godfather of coaching, slowing down. And you slowed down. The pandemic gave you a nudge, but you responded, and you slowed down to take an inventory and got perspective. All right, so anyway, well, I wanted to throw that in there because I thought of it so many. I was like, I'm listening to you. I just keep hearing Jim Myers' voice speaking. So I see.
I'm so glad you did that. Please jump in. This, well, number one, it's your show, but number two, your wisdom is something that I always, and this sounds like I'm stroking you, but I'm really not. Like I really, really appreciate the wisdom. Like I had literally have it written down. Right, it's right there. Right. Like I'm going to put that up and I'm going to look at it every day and I'm going to let it sink in. Right. So
beautiful. That's nice.
So two things. Number one, I want to give credit where credit is due. That Friday when I was having a little bit of a mental stress mode in my head, I called up my coach, Steve Hardison, and in 12 minutes, he helped me see how beautiful this was going to be for me and for the organization and for our future. And from that moment on, I had no fear. From that moment on, not that it wasn't still hard, not that I didn't have all the, but I had no fear of what was coming. It was like my head was on straight. And I had a lot of people go, man, Jonathan, it's like you don't even know there's a pandemic going on. It was like, well, that's because I'm looking for the opportunity in it, right? But what I realized, back to the story, what I realized was really simple, which was I needed to restructure my organization in a meaningful way, because it wasn't just the people. That was part one, right? The second part was I needed to look at everything that we were doing through a fresh lens, Chris, and say, is this the best way that we can be doing things?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like bring that same startup mindset. I realized I was still doing things that I had kind of come up with on a whim in 2012 or 2013, as we were creating the firm, that worked then and may still somewhat work now, but I'd grown so much, the organization had grown so much, we had so much learned things that we were still kind of relying on a tricycle, and we had a Ferrari in the garage, and we were still riding the tricycle around in some areas. So I decided, okay, I'm going to take that same mindset around people and I'm going to bring it to the organization. And I'm going to say, not what can we do different, but if we started Kaiser today, January 1, 2001 was the launch. The soft launch, because it's been a process. And we had just kind of completed some final pieces of it. And it's an endless iterative. So now it's like the mindset is we're always a startup and we're always reinventing ourselves and nothing is the same. And if we're not breaking it, we're probably like behind.
Hmm.
But I said, how would we do things fresh, new, maximizing what we do? And we built a whole system for it. And part of what we saw was the brokers were doing too many things. Now, I had known this for many years. There was one other company that had kind of modeled this behavior, but we had never actually executed upon it. So I said, okay, we're going to execute upon this. We're going to go hire world-class, top talent staff that know the industry, know the business, and we're going to only have brokers do the things that only they can do.
Hmm.
And everything else, we're going to have a systematic process for how support can help them. Number one, that makes it better because most brokers don't have the level of detail that support staff do. So it actually is better product at the end of the day. And then secondarily, you free up the broker's time to go 2x revenue. So already this year, our brokers are on track for 2x average of 2x of what they did last year. That's kind of cool, right? That's like, if you're talking about what matters to a producer, making money is kind of up there, you know? And so to have a support system where you don't have to do everything directionally is where we decided to go. But here's the point of all of this to me. Like, this is, everybody's business is unique. Everybody's business is different. I'm not some incredible human that like, wow, Jonathan, look at this. What I think I should be commended for, if I was going to be commended for everything and for anything, sorry, is the willingness, the resolve to take your own baby, break it over your knee, and build it anew. I now realize why people bring outsiders in to do it. Because it felt like, as an entrepreneur, it felt like I was reaching in and tearing my heart out half the time.
Mm.
Like the things that I were breaking were the things that I created.
Wow, right? What an interesting paradox.
It's like, so while I knew it was good, while I knew it needed to happen, the fact that I actually had to do it, and I don't mean I did everything. I certainly didn't. I have an amazing team. But the fact that we did that at my direction was hard. Super hard.
Why? Why was it hard? Why is it hard for people? Because people can hear this. Everybody can relate to this. Why is that hard?
Because for me, it involved death of a dream, right? There was this level of, I didn't want to go backwards 3 steps to go forward 20. I wanted to keep going forward.
Mm.
I didn't want to go break things. I didn't want to have revenue dips. I didn't want to lose people I'd invested thousands and thousands of hours in, but it was necessary. And if it didn't happen, I wouldn't be here having this podcast with you today. And that's the point about Kaiser 2.0, but it's so connected to JK 2.0, which I haven't talked to anybody about yet. So this, like you and I, when we sat down, this is my first official JK 2.0 conversation, right?
Because
who better than my man, right?
That's what we do here at Tough Talks. Breaking news, baby.
So the 2.0, I think, is actually much more meaningful than the personal 2.0. The JK 2.0, to me, is much more personal than the Kaiser 2.0,
right?
Obviously.
Let's get it.
For me, I had to settle into the realization that I wasn't in control. That I couldn't just will things to being anymore. Things had gotten outside of my ability to will them into reality. That was a first for me. Not that I had not, you know, there's been plenty of failure in my life, if you want to call it that. I don't believe in failure. I believe in learning, but there's been plenty of things that from the outside looking in, people could go, yeah, that dude failed in that. Oh, yeah. Well, I just never quit. Okay, so my mindset was always like, as long as I don't give up, everything's going to be fine because I'm never going to give up. Unless I'm in the ground 6 feet under, this guy's going to get up in the morning and I'm going to go do my best every single day. But what I realized is like, I was kind of killing myself. The reason why Kaiser 1.0 had the growth it did, had the, you know, all these external visions of success and things was willpower. I spent every bit of my willpower keeping a bunch of discombobulated things together, like a lot of entrepreneurs do, by the way, and keeping everybody and just kind of constantly like 1,000 balls in the air, this and that. Oh, this person's mad. Oh, well, let me fix it. Everything was like I had to jump in and intervene on everything. That is exhausting. And I did it for 8 years. So I was burnt out. That's why I was unhappy. I was burnt out. I'd gotten so far away from what I started a company for. I didn't start a company to deal with 47 complaints about God knows how many things all the time. Right. And I, instead of what's the root of that and how do I fix that? I was just putting band-aids everywhere. Like my daughter. All right. So I have a 21-month-old daughter and she's the cutest thing you've ever seen in your entire life. She loves band-aids. Now she puts band-aids everywhere. She makes up owies so she can put a band-aid in a spot that's not right now covered by a band-aid. That's what I was doing. I was covering the organization and myself and everybody else with band-aids. So one of the things, the biggest thing with JK 2.0, I let go. I went like this. I was the orchestrator behind the scenes with, you know, puppets. Psh, dropped them. And sat back and said, I'm going to watch how things unfold without my endless interventions. And I saw where the organization was misaligned by letting go. Because I wasn't willfully with a powerful personality keeping something in place that really wasn't supposed to be in place. But because I was so intentional and because I'm so powerful in creation, I was almost forcing it through my will to stay. That's crazy. And then the things that I was forcing to stay were the things that were causing me the most pain. And that was hard. Because every day, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I see. Right. So we keep coming back to that because I'm going to slow this part down because I think that there's gold in right in the middle of this for people who are listening and watching. He's going, that was hard. And I want to slow it down and go, well, yeah, why is it hard for us? What is it that we're believing? Okay. That has it be hard. Why isn't it easy? Because it's working. So why is the thing that works so well hard? What is it that we're believing that makes it hard? Because it's not hard. That's just it isn't hard. It's hard for us, right? So, you know, some things are coming to mind as I look. You're so fucking smart, dude. So there's a lot of Eastern philosophy that I'm hearing from you. Beginner's mind, non-attachment, and surrender are three things that I've studied from Eastern philosophy that I'm hearing loud and clear through you right now. So let's explore. So surrendering.
I was going to say surrender is the perfect word. It's a better word than letting go because letting go isn't necessarily a mental thing. It could just be your hands are tired, right? Surrendering is a willful act.
Exactly. Yes, it is an act of courage. Right? To stop trying to control everything.
Yeah. And if I could just have another tangent, because I just saw something. So you're taught so much. You know, I have filled my head since I was a young man, right? I was a missionary kid. My parents were poor. I had no idea. I'm not saying that to get people feel bad for me or anything. I'm saying that because that's what drove me. What drove me was My parents didn't have squat. I was made fun of as a kid. I was going to be successful regardless. And no matter how many people told me I wasn't, just watch me. Stick my chin out. Remember Kobe Bryant in the NBA Finals? He just stuck his chin out and he just willed it to be. That's how I lived. I lived from that place of like, I'm willing it to happen. Surrender for someone who's willed his entire life, that it, surrender? That's a word that like, it wasn't even in my vocabulary.
Right.
Will never surrender was my mindset. But what I realized is that what I was able to see, which is, again, it's ugly, right? Anytime you see something about yourself, it's ugly. It's great. You're grateful for it, but it's ugly. I realized that on one hand, I was telling people this philosophy. But on the other hand, I wasn't really living it, right? I knew it. I knew how to articulate it. I knew, and I believed it, but I didn't see it in me. The only way that I got to this place was I was in a situation for the first time in my professional career, I realized I couldn't sustain what I was doing and things were outside of my control. And I had to make a decision on what I was going to do. And so I decided to surrender. And it was that surrender that made it possible for me to basically tear down my organization and rebuild it. Because every brick I threw off, every plank I removed, it hurt. And why did it hurt? Why was it painful? It hurt because I believed that my identity was tied up in the success of my company. Like for me, there was very little gap, if any, between Kaiser and me. I was Kaiser and Kaiser was me. And so that's why for me it was so personal when things wouldn't go right or people would leave if I didn't want them to leave or whatever.
So the belief then was that, right, then I could be a failure.
That right. So it was like, I took it personal when things didn't go well. Instead of realizing that that's not how it is. That's not even reality. And that's not
That's a whole other thing that was like going well. So like you reminded me of an analogy that I used. Like when we're driving, say we're going from here up to Sholo, there will be times, and Sholo is a town up in the mountains in Arizona here, for those that don't know that. But the reason I picked Sholo is because there's going to be on the road up into the mountains, there's switchbacks.
Lots of them.
By virtue of the terrain, there has to be. So every foot that my vehicle is moving on the road is progress, even though there are a bunch of times where my ultimate destination is to the northeast, but my car is traveling southwest. And that's the nature of things, right?
Great analogy.
Sometimes it looks like we're going the wrong way, but as long as we're moving, it's forward progress. Have you ever heard of a Chinese principle called Wu Wei? Two words, W-U, next word, W-E-I. Can I tell you a short, cool story? Because you're telling it. You are it. So you're the main character in the story I'm about to tell. So these young monks go out into the forest to meditate every day at the base of this enormous waterfall. There's one day they get out, because it's just a cool-ass place to do that. You know, tons of churning. It's a huge waterfall. Lots of water pouring over the cliff into this big pool. Lots of spray and white noise, and it's beautiful. It's intense. Now, this one morning, they go out, and there's an old man, a long, gray-bearded old man, standing on the edge of the cliff. And they're all saying, what's that guy doing there? And he jumps. He jumps into the pool, and he's gone. And they're all freaked out, thinking maybe they just went witnessed a suicide. And they're, you know, looking at you like, oh my God, where is he? Holy, why did that? But then about 45 seconds after the guy disappeared into this churning, violent pool, down a ways where it flows off into a calm stream, his head pops up out of the water, the old guy, and he swims over the side and gets out, shakes himself off, and just starts walking. And they're like, hold the show, Scooter. They're like, what? In the actual, how that, and they're peppering him with questions, and he's just all calm. And they're saying, how did you do that? Why did you, how did you not drown? How did you out-muscle? So someone said, how did you out-muscle the Karens? That's when he said, all right, hold on. I didn't. I've been practicing this since I was a child. But didn't it pull you down away from air? Yes. Yes, of course. That's how it works, the flow. It pulled me. I jumped in. My momentum plus the current pulled me down to the cold, dark depths away from oxygen. Yes, that's correct. That happened. And it's at that very moment where I have a choice to make. I've got two options. One, freak out. Fix it. Go, this is an issue. I need to fix it. As if.
Yeah.
Right? As if a whole bunch, as if I know which the hell weighs up in the first place. I'm all discombobulate. Or even if I did, as if I'm stronger than the forces of nature than water, right? But still a very popular response among humans, right? Is to panic and try to fix shit when it's not going your way, when there's so many things stronger than you and out of your control. That's option A. Option B was what we're discussing right now. Surrender. Wu Wei. Action through non-action. My choice of action in this moment is to stop trying to fix shit or control it and to surrender into the flow. And if you study any currents, you know, like if you're in a riptide at the beach, you know, the lifeguards always say, stop doing it. Let it take you. Let it take you. It'll take you down. Yeah. But what it always does, if you'll let it, it always takes you back up. Right? You let it just stop, chill, relax. Hold your breath, let it pull you out, swim down, come back in where there's no riptide. Right. Well, that's what this guy does. He says, I go down with the water and I come up with the water. And they left. That was his cone to them. I go down with the water and I come up with the water. And I've been practicing this since I was a kid. So I remember to always know in the moments, when those moments occur in our lives, when it's time to stop forcing shit. And that is what I'm reminded of as I'm listening to you now, and it's profound.
Well, thank you for that kind analogy. I mean, for me, and I think for a lot of the leaders out there that are listening to this, it might have seemed peaceful like that in the moment, but it was a daily thing, because the old habits of you can go fix this, JK, you know you can, versus letting it happen and trusting that the end result was going to be better. That's the hard part. We train ourselves and we empower ourselves. I've been reading self-help stuff since I was right out of college, even in college, right? When I started really getting into it. And Tony Robbins, go down the list, right? I had to intentionally decide to, and I didn't do it all right. The crazy thing is then people leave and you know, you have agreements with them, and they are so much of the time they try to change their agreements or they want to break them. And so how do you respond and how do you protect the people that, so it was messy, right? Like you look at a demolition site. Is a demolition site clean? No. And there's a lot of things that I would do, knowing what I know today, there's a lot of things I would do differently. But you know what? There's a Teddy Roosevelt quote about, it's not the critic who counts. You know what I mean? Like, I was in the battle. I was in this, it felt existential struggle for the survival of my firm and the survival of me, even though that's way over dramatized, because once the world calmed down a little bit, we actually had business coming back our way quickly. So it's not like, you know, there was a period of 6 months, maybe 3 to 6 months, where it was really kind of, I wasn't scared, but it was like all hands on deck mindset. And then it started to come back, and then it just started to roar, right? But I think that idea of what's meant to be will be if you allow it to be. I got to tell you, Chris, on the other side of it, my favorite part is I don't have the drama that used to fill my docket.
Oh, that's nice. So I was just going to ask you. I was just going to, you're ahead of me. Okay, so a couple things. All right, you don't have it. That's the beginning of the answer to the question I was only thinking, didn't even ask yet. What's really different now? Mm-hmm. What's different about you? Right. So what distinctly is different between JK 2.0 and previous? Right.
One, I'm not clinging. I'm not trying to use sheer power of will to affect everything around me. That is beautiful. And guess what that reserves my energy for the things that really need to take place. Right.
Creative genius. Right.
So that's beautiful. Mm. Number two is the attachment. That's like, Kaiser's not going to fail. I mean, we're kicking butt and taking names, but if it did, I wouldn't have the, like, I'd be fine. Right? Even though that sounds so weird to say, the fact that I actually believed I wouldn't be fine is ridiculous. But somewhere in my head, from the scarcity of having nothing and building this from nothing, the idea of, I don't want to lose it all again because I remember what it's like to be poor and that wasn't fun, I don't have that fear anymore. In fact, in some weird way, it almost sounds exciting. Like, what would I do next? What would I do next, right? Like, what would I do?
Yeah.
I think that there's a peacefulness about me that is new. I had found a lot of peace working with Steve, but I also still, it was layered on top of all this stuff we just talked about. And so to have that kind of cleared out, well, I'm sure there's a little bit of it still there, but for the most part cleared out. The peacefulness is much more peaceful, as weird as it sounds. And just an acceptance and a trust. That's cool. It's also enabled me to see things a little bit differently. So now we're, you know, like thinking through the lens of how do we, as part of 2.0 for Kaiser, think even bigger than we were thinking under 1.0? And so, like, some of the things we've done is I never had opened up the equity pool. Now I've opened up the equity pool, and we have, you know, really, really amazing folks that are now partners of the firm and sharing in the upside of the firm. We now have investment strategies where we're almost thinking, we're not, but thinking like a family office as an organization, taking a portion of the profits at the end of the year and investing in things that could benefit all of us. So that's kind of cool. The amount of strategic things that I'm able to focus on now versus fire putting out. I mean, it's literally unbelievable. I cannot tell you how much my email used to be consumed with drama. Like, sometimes I almost wonder if we're on the right track. I'm like, why is my email so quiet? And then I have to remind myself, it's because things are working. You know, mm-hmm. Like, we have more in the pipeline. We have more active business. I mean, we probably cut a third of our team, maybe a little bit more, maybe 40%. And we have record numbers in the pipeline. We're going to have a record year revenue-wise, and the brokers are 2x-ing it, if not more. So all of that suggests, like, those are the kind of data points that I want to be focused on, not how full is my inbox describing for me how chaotic and how fast we're moving that's going to determine whether I feel like we're a success or not, right? Which is, I say things very authentically because I want people to, like, realize so much of what we as leaders think about, unintentionally or not, is delusion. It's true delusion, the fact that there would even be something in my mind that said, the more that's in my inbox is the better that we're doing. Like, I have never once in my entire life seen that on anything. Yet somehow, somewhere in my head, that existed.
What do you think about this moving forward, taking the learnings? By the way, I have a request. I hope that you'll do some kind of writing on.
I need to.
Takeaways. Well, we need you to.
We need to. Let's do it together.
No, I'm saying we, the world, need you to.
I'm saying JK wants CD to do it with him. There we go. See how I turn that back around?
Go get it and get it underway, baby. That sounds nice. That sounds nice. That's pretty good. Right. So, because I want to be able
to. I'll bring the experiential part of having just done it. You bring the wisdom and we'll knock it out.
So, that sounds fun, actually. And that, you know, the reason that Tough Talks even exists, this podcast, is to give people concrete tools that they can use to speed up the creation of excellence in their lives with less effort. Mm-hmm. So, I want to reduce this, the brilliance that you're bringing, right, by virtue of the choice that you made and how to respond to and create from a pandemic moving forward. How can we not need something like a pandemic to, in order to have these kinds of discoveries and growth spurts, like quantum leaps of growth, as opposed to, you know, gradual, incremental, or none? Why, like, I don't want to need a pandemic. So, all right, so what do you got?
For me, it is like, okay, so one of our principles was this. We are disruptive. We embrace change. And we're forward thinking in all that we do. We continuously explore and integrate new tools and innovations with the goals of maximizing personal efficiency and providing best-in-class service to each and every client. That is articulated verbatim as one of our 15 core operating principles. Here's the problem. That has to be somehow lived into every day, which is a leadership thing. And if the leader says that on one hand, but quietly acts as if that's not the case, intentional or otherwise, because I'm not, a lot of mine was just a blind spot. I didn't know it was a blind spot. And that's not to not take ownership of it. I take 100% ownership of it. I'm just saying, I think there's a lot of leaders out there that would be nodding, going, yeah, JK, of course. But had they really looked within their organization to see where that's true, and had they rooted it out? So for me, it's a mindset of constant disruptive innovation where the standard, the norm, the way that you do your KPIs is looking for where you could break it and build it. You know, it's sort of like working out. As a guy that you and I both like to work out, if you don't tear down the muscle, it never grows. So where are you as an organization focused on tearing down that muscle so that you can grow? And I think that is so much easier said than done, Chris. Like, if I had just like the easy button, right, push here twice, it doesn't exist. It's a cultural thing, because people don't like change. And one of the things that is true about organizations is they get into ruts. And that rut is there because people feel comfortable. Whether it's ideal or not, they're comfortable with, they at least, it's the devil they know, right? At least they know what to expect versus the uncertainty and the unknown out there that comes when you break things. And everybody goes to self-preservation mode, and what, how's it going to be better for me? And maybe it isn't, maybe it is. So I don't know if I have an answer that's as crystal as I'd like to give, other than that is an intentional thought process now. And as part of our leadership meetings, we ask, you know, where do we need to be breaking something? And I got to tell you, it is being realized in real time. Like, we had a leadership meeting this morning, and there's something that we got to break. And instead of it being like something where in the past I would try to overthink it and come up with, you know, I'd spend probably 100 hours just, you know, just racking my brain for how to fit. I don't even like, it's like, okay, go do it. Next. All right, that's such a different philosophy from, and I'm not afraid, or fear is the wrong word, because I really don't operate from a place of fear, but reluctance. How about that? Right? How about the word reluctance? Like, the reluctance to make a big change because you don't really see exactly how it's going to play out. And so you want to, like, you know, sort of get it quantified fully first. And as a result, it turns into like this, you know, dystopian, dysfunctional, I don't know, like, Like, you don't do the things you need to do. And so back to the Jim Myers thing, you're not getting rid of people. You're not fixing things right away. You're much less nimble, right? The whole reason why startups can move so quickly is they don't have all this legacy crap that they got to overthink and get over. They just go do, right? And so how do we as leaders in today's world, which is so fast, how do we adopt that same mindset of, we're constantly building the airplane as we fly instead of let's go spend 4 years and redesign a new airplane and then we'll go to RFP and then 25 years later we'll have a new rig. Like, no. How about, that piece ain't working. Let's yank it off. I know we'll dip a little bit, but let's just real quick plug that other one back in and then we elevate. So that's my mindset in a poorly stated word picture. I think that's the way
I'm not letting you do that. No, I will not accept delete. We're deleting that minimizer. Bullshit. So many wisdom bombs, brother. I mean, I've got 3 pages of notes over here, dude. All right. From the things I was breaking were the things I created. I had to settle into the fact that I was not in control. I let go. Demolition is not clean. Love that. Right. Constant disruptive innovation. And where do we need to break something? All right, we have some work to do. Whoops.
Whoops.
Whoops. You know, your people are so fortunate to have you at the helm, brother, modeling so much excellence, primarily or beginning with your addiction, to your own development. To doing what I am convinced we are all designed to do as humans, which is to grow, and create more excellence faster with less effort as we practice.
Can I add, I know we're out of time, but can I add one final point to what you just said? I have been coached by literally the greatest coach in the history of the world for 10 years. And before that, I had Steve Chandler as the second greatest coach in the history of the world, but I wouldn't have been able to
be there. Show and tell. Here they are, the boys.
I was coached by those two gentlemen so intensely for so long that the other thing that happened in the pandemic is they're both named Steve. During the pandemic, you can't be in the room with Steve Hardison. There is a thing called COVID going around. So I also was in this scenario where I'd been pack, more, learn, grow, understand so much into this little melon, which is oversized, by the way. Not little is the wrong term, but into this head. I've never said this before, so I'm gonna say it. I just saw it. That I needed some time to sort through so much of that stuff, to let it settle in. It's like 1 week I'm working on my layups, and then the next week I'm working on my jump shot, and the next week I'm working on my footwork, and then the next week I'm working on my abs. And it's like, I just had this time, whether I wanted it or not, I had this time to let all of the greatness of all the coaching and all the books and all that sort of settle into me. And I don't even, there's probably a coaching term for all that. I don't know what it is, but I needed it and I didn't even know I needed it. And that settling in is part of this process too, where I had to, instead of always having a place I could take all my issues and always having a place to help me solve for X right away, I could just look in the mirror and go, what do you think, dude? What do you think? What's your thoughts on the matter? How would you handle this with the history of all the goodness that's been packed into your head? And that was scary and fun at the same time.
Simmer down. You simmer down.
Simmer down now.
My man, you're something else. I appreciate you so much. Love you, bro.
Love you, brother.
Thank you for all of this. Thank you from my tribe for all the gifts of your commitment to your professional and personal growth.
I appreciate you.
I love that, dude. Whew. Man, we covered some territory right there, didn't we? In about not even an hour. I literally do have 3 pages of notes. So I kind of summarized it there at the end. I'll reiterate some of my takeaways, some of the quotes, the great quotes that I captured. It's the ones that I captured. It'd be fun to hear from you, the ones I didn't. Like, what? That'd be fun for me to hear from you. If you really appreciated that conversation, what are the pieces that really stood out for you? What were the takeaways that really mattered for you? And among them, for me, are being in the inquiry, what excellence can we create from this? Especially when the this is a set of circumstances like a pandemic that we like didn't want, right? This is a set of circumstances that people would call adversity, right? An undesired, unrequested set of circumstances. Being in the inquiry, okay, not what I wanted. What excellence can I create from this? But being able to do it by letting go, right? And he said, breaking things that he created, getting out of ego, disassociating your personality from your creation or from your business, not having it be your identity, settling into the fact that I was not in control. That's amazing. I love the analogy. Demolition is not clean. Like, what do we need to break? Of course, it's going to be dirty. There's dust. Constant disruptive innovation. Never taking off from that. Beginner's mind. Where do we need to break something? So, all right, folks. Thank you, JK, man. Thank you so damn much. I hope you appreciated. Isn't it fun to watch that guy grow? We did our first episode back in November of 2019. So this is our Tough Talks 2.0 with JK 2.0. All right, folks. As always, thanks for tuning in. And until next time, great miracles. Thank you.